This is episode number 26 of the Serious About Security podcast for February 8th, 2013, sponsored by the Center for Education and Research in Information Assurance and Security, or Serious, at Purdue University. We're trying this in a new format today with Google Hangouts. So if you're listening to this, then you could find the video version of this on YouTube. So I'll introduce the host of today's podcast. I'm Preston Wiley, CISSP CCNA.
This is Keith Watson.
And I'm Mike Hill, CISSP.
So we'll start off with the articles today. The first article is mine, and it is about the Homeland Security issuing a notice to users that they should disable their universal plug-and-play service due to vulnerabilities within it. And we do have on the links a link to their vulnerability note. And just to give listeners a understanding of what universal plug-and-play is it is a basically a standard for opening ports on a like a firewall or whatever, so that a device when plugged into a network can communicate with the internet and essentially have ports open for it, so that it can communicate. Apparently there's vulnerabilities in it that would allow an attacker to essentially have unrestricted access to an internal network that obviously they shouldn't have. And I think this article is interesting because the Homeland Security Department seems to be taking a pretty active approach on giving information to end users about security vulnerabilities. And the last one article that I believe we talked about was the Homeland Security Department warning users about a Java vulnerability. And now they're coming back just a few weeks later and saying, oh, look, you should also disable your universal plug and play. And I think that is a very, very good thing that they're doing, and I hope that they continue to do this more in the future. So what do you guys think of this?
Well, it is a change from what we've seen. Typically, they've sent these notifications, like you mentioned, mostly it's been to people in industry and not so much the end user or the home user, if you will. So this is definitely a good thing. Specifically with this case, I mean, if you think about it, most people have some sort of device connecting them, their house to their ISP, whether that be like a Comcast cable modem or DSL router or something like that. And so there's quite a few of these devices out there, and most of the modern ones do have this turned on. And so the fact that it's that some of this universal plug and play can be actually queried over the WAN side of the interface is really disturbing. So it's definitely something you want to make people aware of. I'm a little concerned about telling people that it's a problem, because how are they going to know what to do to change it and whether they have an issue or not? I mean, we don't typically, when people install their modem device, they're not, you know, specifically looking at a lot of the configuration options. And if it's one of those configurations that's on by default, typically people won't turn it off because they're not sure if that's something they should do. So, you know, this is one of those things where the vendor needs to be informing people, but then how are they going to do that? Yeah, there's a lot of problems here, with trying to get the word out and then figuring out how to tell people how to make the correction.
Yeah, to be clear, this isn't a problem like with the operating system like Windows or Mac OS X. This is a problem with Universal Plug and Play itself, which while it is kind of part built into many operating systems, the problem is basically the internet entry point to your local area network, so your router, and people, there's only a few operating systems. Well, there's a lot of different manufacturers of routers, and a lot of people have routers that are supplied to them by their internet service provider, and sometimes they don't even allow them to get access to the routers to update, yep, or don't allow them to update them.
Yeah, totally, and they're confusing too. If you've looked at, you know, the ones that have been out in the last few years have been a little easier to figure out, but if you go back 5 or 6 years, those things are very hard to configure out for somebody who's not familiar with the technology.
Yeah, and you know, they're almost always enabling the universal plug and play by default as well. I was actually, when this came out, I went back and looked at my router. I've changed routers a couple times, and sure enough, it actually, I was surprised I'd left it enabled, so I quickly disabled it. But you're absolutely right. You know, a lot of folks, you know, they may not be able to get in there and configure their routers, or they may just not know how to. So, you know, I think as vendors, you know, they like to enable it so that people can just, you know, plug it and play, you know, as the name implies, you can just hook it up and it'll work. But in light of these sorts of things, they should probably start releasing them so that it's not on by default.
I think it's interesting that the Rapid7 guys, who currently make products based on Metasploit, were the ones that discovered this and then produced a paper about it as well. So that's good to see that they're actively out there looking for these sorts of issues. Typically, you don't necessarily see that from tool vendors. They typically provide the tools, but in this case, they are actually active in helping find this issue and then helping alert others about it. So, you know, kudos to them for that.
Well, I think universal plug and play has kind of been on the radar for a long time. It's not a new kind of thing on the security researchers' radar. It's been, I think, a problem ever since it's been released. As you know, it doesn't really have any authentication or anything like that. Basically, if you're on a local area network that has universal plug and play, you can essentially open ports on a firewall without really any authentication or anything like that. So I think it's been a problem. I've heard suggestions prior to this that you should disable it just because if you have anybody on your local network, they can kind of wreak some havoc on your network if they wanted to. But you know, this was targeting local network and not accessing universal plug and play via vulnerability.
So do you think in the in the future, we're going to see more things like this from the Department of Homeland Security? As you mentioned earlier, you know, just a couple weeks ago, they were talking about the Java vulnerability. Now they're discussing the universal plug and play. You think they're going to be more consistent in releasing these things, or is this an indication that they're very concerned about this as a vulnerability?
I think it's both. If you go back a little bit in time, you may recall that on the nightly news, they didn't talk about security vulnerabilities in computer systems that people had. And then when various worms started attacking, that became nightly news then. And some of that reporting included how to prevent that from affecting your own computer in your home, because those were more prominent. I think we're going to see that more. Whether or not it's a good thing that the Department of Homeland Security's CERT team is doing it, I don't know if that's, I don't know if that's the best approach, but as long as somebody's talking about it that is a legitimate source and they do it without creating a lot of FUD in the process, I think it could be very helpful.
Okay, well, we can move on to the next article now.
All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about presidential authority when it comes to launching internet attacks. In the New York Times this past week or February 3rd, there was a report regarding President Obama's memo that described the ability of the federal government basically to launch attacks against other nations and potentially other non-state actors, I guess is the proper term, using cyber weapons. And to preemptively do that, This kind of follows on the heels of another memo that came out regarding drone strikes and legitimacy of drone strikes attacking American citizens that may be part of involved in terrorist activities. Anyways, this one is, you know, kind of what we suspected, but this is a little more official in that the federal government claims that they will use preemptive cyber warfare if necessary to prevent damage to U.S. interests. So we've kind of suspected that they could do that, and I believe a couple of years ago the Pentagon released a strategy paper which talked about using not just cyber war and cyber weapons is the term that they used, but also using, you know, if they needed to bomb some telecommunications infrastructure in another country that was causing a source of problems here in the U.S. That was in one of their strategy documents, too. So it's not completely new, but this is basically the memo that outlines what the government's thinking is on this. So it's very interesting. The problem is that we don't have a good answer to is this idea of attribution. If I can launch an attack from a country that is not my own in the attempt of fooling the United States government into believing that attack is coming from the particular country I launched the attack from, that might draw them into attacking that country and avoiding me. So there's a little problem there. There's also, we've talked about before, this idea of a kid in his basement being a non-state actor launching an attack in the U.S., and how does the U.S. government respond to that, especially if that is a person independent of any government. So there's a lot of issues with this, but it's a very interesting topic.
Well, I also, the article does point out, I think, some of those issues as well. But one thing that I found interesting about the article was that they kind of talked about the cyber weapons kind of in relation to nuclear arms, and they said that they had some cyber weapons that were so devastating that they would treat them like a nuclear weapon, in that they wouldn't launch them unless it was approved by the President of the United States himself. And I found that kind of interesting. I mean, I think what they're talking about is things that would disrupt an entire, you know, country, like dropping the power or things like that is what I'm thinking they're talking about.
Yeah, totally.
But it wasn't clear from the article exactly what kind of, and I don't think it's ever going to be clear what they're talking about.
And another issue we talked about is just because we can launch a devastating cyber attack does not mean we could withstand our own devastating attack against us. And we have a lot of problems right now.
Well, yeah, and that's what I wonder if we're trying to build up for, kind of like the arms races, if you will. We'll build up our cyber weapons and other countries will build up theirs, and it'll kind of be a standoff of, you know, if you don't attack us, we won't attack you, sort of thing. But you mentioned, Keith, some of the issues are with the attribution. You know, if the hacker in the basement can make a major government believe the attack came from another major government, that could have some very bad consequences. You know, we're a third party, you know, kind of got these two major governments into a war that, you know, neither of them really attacked one another in the first place. So I didn't see anything real surprising in this article necessarily, but, you know, the fact is, you know, we talk about it all the time, you know, the cyber attacks can be, you know, can cause a lot of damage, and, you know, we have to be certain of who initiated the attack, I think, as a nation before we would retaliate.
Right, yeah, I just had a thought. You know, the other issue is if someone were to attack part of the U.S. infrastructure, what infrastructure would you classify as being most valuable, in the sense that if somebody attacks it, that we have to respond? So obviously, if somebody attacked the power grid and we lost power in a significant portion of the U.S., that'd be a pretty major problem. But then how do you extend that off to other parts of the internet, you know, because we're so tied to it with most of our business and now social interactions. So if somebody attacked Twitter and took Twitter off the air, will we be able to respond with that? Just a thought. I'm asking because another article that came out in Activity was the Twitter complaining about getting hacked, and then some 250,000 accounts or something like that were possibly compromised. Anyways. But they in their blog post and talking about it, they talked about the fact that the Washington Post and the New York Times were attacked by China, and so they're just kind of claiming in a sense that they were also part of that attack activity, I guess you could say. So if you attack the Times and the Washington Post and Twitter, can we respond by blowing up your country? I don't know. It's not a well-defined answer question there. So,
well, I know one thing we've touched on in the past, and I don't know if this was made clear. I doubt it was in the article, but, you know, would a cyber attack prompt a physical attack in response, as you just alluded to, Keith? You know, if we feel we've been damaged through cyber attacks, are we going to respond with our own cyber attack, which would seem logical, but is there cases where we would just go full on and you know, do a physical attack as well?
Yeah, that's a good question, and that's not clear.
I don't think they're going to probably make that clear for us either.
Well, they said in the article they will not disclose their official policy to us as the general public because it's secret, top secret, or whatever classification they give it, because they don't want, you know, adversaries to know exactly what their policy is for launching these sorts of attacks.
Right. And they do post some amount of cyber strategy on the Department of Defense website, and I know they have a strategy. They have the DoD strategy for operating in cyberspace. It's a policy document. So there's lots of good reading out there if you want to see what they're thinking about, but the top secret side, I'm sure we'll not hear about that for a while until somebody leaks it.
All right, and with that, we'll wrap it up. Thanks to Mike Hill and Keith Watson and Sirius, and have a safe and secure day.